Back in 1967, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. spoke to students at Barrett Junior High Schools in Philadelphia and delivered a teaching asking those youths, what is your life's blueprint? It was an unplanned stop, and our reason there's a film of that speech is because a student took it upon themselves to film it. And that story holds a lesson that I believe my next guest greatly expands through his work of helping youth find and develop a direction for their lives by embracing a passion and building a plan for their lives, taking advantage of situations like that high school student in Philadelphia did, seeing an opportunity and taking it. His life is certainly a testimony, by the way, to how this can be done for and the rewards that come from that focus and drive determination. His life took him from orphanages to military service to Wall Street leadership. He's developed a life design course that's been adopted by many schools and universities. He tells his story in the book, The Road Less Traveled, An Unlikely Journey from the Orphanage to the Boardroom. He's also written a companion book which presents the ideas of his life design course. That's called The Four P's, Modern Fable About Preparing for Your Future. Ed, hey, Jim, how are you today, sir?
I am great. Nice to be on your show.
Well, thank you for providing such a great guidance for so many youths who are in such need, as we see in survey and poll and survey after poll. A couple of websites, edhajim, H-A-J-I-M.com, and we'll also find more information. As life design course, we have those links at our homepage as well. It is often said, Ed, that our youth years determine our lives and who we'll wind up being. And to say the least, your life is quite the argument against that theory. Talk about your early years and some of the things you had to endure and even survive.
Oh, it's a little bit of a long story, but my first 18 years, I spent time in hotels, motels. My father and mother got divorced when I was three. Mother basically got custody, took me from Los Angeles to St. Louis. My father got visiting rights on Sunday and $5 a week of alimony and child support. He came a couple months after I was in St. Louis, picked me up, and instead of taking me to the movie or in a park, he basically kidnapped me and took me back to Los Angeles, told me that my mother basically passed away. He told her not to look for us. If you want to find out what happened, you have to read the book. But anyway, over the next 15 years, I basically spent my time in hotels, motels. When the war broke up, my father was drafted in, as a radio operator on a merchant ship, and I spent the entire war in five different foster homes. After the war, we came to New York, and I spent the summer in the YMCA at 34th Street, and then a hotel room in Coney Island. I did pretty well at PS 106 when my father couldn't find land-based work, so I ended up going back to sea, and I ended up in a couple of orphanages, one in Far Rockaway, which I did very well with, but I aged out of there, and my father totally disappeared, which is a very long story, and I became a ward of the state, ended up getting put in another orphanage in Yonkers, New York, which was close to a very good high school, and from there I had a lot of luck. I did well in school, and I only three or four scholarships I could get. I got the Naval Scholarship, NROTC. That changed my life. And that's basically why one of the reasons I'm very strong on scholarships for kids. They can get to a certain point in their life, they need a small amount of funding to take them over that next hurdle. That's where I'm spending most of my philanthropy. I spent my life in addition to Wall Street, in education, boys' school, and the business school, and I also became the chairman of the Board of Trustees at the University of Rochester.
What do you see missing in kids today, in youths? Because I remember the comedian Jerry Lewis. He said there's various stages of life, infancy, adolescence, and adulthood. But between adolescence and adulthood, he called it, there's an age of stupid. And how long that age exists is really based upon the individual. What were you seeing in youths that compelled you, motivated you to come up with the life design course?
Well, see, I believe there are two kinds of education. One teaches you how to make a living, and a lot of our schools do a pretty good job of that. The second type of education is to teach you how to make a life. That was left to religion and parents and so forth in the old days. And with the change in society, the advent of AI, the advent of social media, the geopolitical reconfiguration, the game has gotten very complicated. So I think that I have a crusade. It's presumptuous, but I want to add a dimension to high school and college education where kids sit around and think about who they are, where they want to go, how they expect to get there. And if they've got time to find out if they get there, are they going to be happy about it? That's what my life design course does. And it's a simple course. It's been basic because I've taken it out to universities and high schools. I have nobody turn me down so far. They all agree that today's youth need time spent formally. Now, it used to be done in the dining room and in dormitories and so forth, conversation. Formally, in a freshman year, a student sits down, goes through this life design course, ends up with a plan, which he tries to execute over the next 4 years, testing various things. So when they graduate, they end up with a diploma and a roadmap for life. And by the way, the diploma has a lot of parts of it which become useless in a very short period of time, like my slide rule capability when I was an engineer. In a few years, it was worthless, you know. But this roadmap for life can last a lifetime. And I used that because I used it. I had these yellow pads, which I went through what I call my four Ps, finding your passions, finding your principles, find your partners, and then find your plans. But, you know, this thing can last a lifetime, and I really believe people should start thinking about it. And it's only because the system has gotten much more complex. You know, Grandpa went to school, learned something, spent his whole life at one company, and died. Today, kids have to pivot a number of times. What I'm trying to give these kids is a vocabulary for their inner voice, which will allow them to handle change. And that's basically what the Life Design Course is. And it's simple, basically, just saying, who am I, you know, and where do I want to go, and what's that road look like? And I go back through my life, and many cases, I did those tests. My sophomore year, I wanted to be a physicist. So as I was an engineer, I took an advanced physics course. Well, in a very short period of time, I realized that this was not for me. And, you know, testing these things, these words you give people, what is an engineer? You know, what is a lawyer? What do you do Monday morning? And getting those questions answered early on so you don't make too many mistakes in your life, I think is very important. But it is really because the system has gotten to be very complex. Now, as I've taken this out to schools, they say, absolutely, we need this. And it's been very interesting. I now have it in 10 schools, and I have it at both ends of the spectrum, as I call it. I have one where it's a very upscale, you know, secondary school, and then I have one in Newark, which is basically mostly first gens. And they both seem to acquire an interest in it and find it very fascinating. I mean, let me take a simple example. You know, when a kid is 16, 18 years old, he is a combination of his or her genes and their environment, over which they have no control. So in a sense, you have no control who you are. Then somewhere in that period, 18, 19, what Jerry Lewis said, you come up, wake up one morning, you say, this is who I am. These are the parts of me I want to keep. This is the part of me I'd really like to get rid of or eliminate, reduce significant. And these are the parts of me I want to add. And that's what I want kids to do. And I want it to be overt where they say, I really want to learn this because. And so that's my crusade. I spent my life, I say, besides the Wall Street, I spent my time, my life in education, being the chairman of the board of trustees of a boys' school, being the Harvard Business School, being on the Dean's Advisory Committee, which is the board, basically. And then, of course, Rochester. I spent 30 years as a trustee. University of Rochester. So I've really been immersed in education. This is what I see is needed. You got to give them money to get over that little hump there between 17 and 18. I got to go to college, cost a little bit of money, so I basically concentrated my philanthropy and basically scholarships. But on the other hand, we've got to take these young people and say, just take a little time off formally to ask the questions which are very important for you for a lifetime. And that's what Martin Luther King said. I think that's absolutely terrific. Exactly correct. And I think it can really help young people get that first step right, and that's most important. Sorry for the long answer.
No, I love long answers because that's how we all learn. I'm here to learn from you as a listener is right now. I'm not one of these hosts who come in thinking I'm going to know all and compete with you. I'm certainly not going to do that. We're talking with Ed Hageum and his story, his life at edhageum.com. We have the link at the homepage. You're listening to Issues and Ideas. I think the key to your program to it is that it doesn't have one point of focus. You have passions, principles, partners, plans, because so many programs, so many education systems have just one direction, and that direction doesn't work for that one specific student. Well, then what? And with passions, Ed, do you find, because I know I found this over time, the toughest question you can ask someone of any age is what's your passion?
Passion's an overused word. You know, it's your interests, your talents, and basically also your context. I mean, today Kiev and New Jersey are two different contexts. They got to be, your passions are very different. But you should dig down deeply and say, what do I really like? And also, I make it very clear to people, passions change over time. You got to check in with yourself on a regular basis. I kid about this, but high school is when the first passion, sort of real passion. You want to be an ice cream truck driver or something when you're 4 years old, but somewhere in that period Jerry Lewis talked about, you start to come with real passions. My work, math, science, baseball, basketball, and girls. And you know, those are my passions. And you know, then I went to college. Those sort of morphed. Baseball and basketball died after my freshman year, and it moved into extracurricular activities. And math and science evolved into chemical engineering. But even now, when I moved into extracurricular activities, in my junior year, I started a magazine. And basically, I found my real passion was putting people together to solve a problem. I really loved doing that. And that taught me that I really wanted to be a manager. So these are the kinds of things when you start testing yourself, you start to feel excitement. In fact, inside that, I found what I really got a kick out of, and I didn't find it until 10 years later. Basically, I really got a kick out of helping people do better than they thought they could. And that's really very interesting because that makes you a very good manager because you're really interested in other people, and that's what really drives the system. And I think that was my success. Actually, I got a young fellow told me that somewhere middle career, he came and said, I really like working for you. And I said, you know, why? He said, because you really want me to succeed. So these are the kinds of, there are subtle passions. I have to play baseball. There are other passions which are deep-seated. And I think people have to keep sorting those things out. Now, what's my passion now? I mean, my passion used to be stock market, you know, managing people. Now I'm trying, my passion is trying to get an idea out in, which is going to be very important. I always find this one sentence I love is, you know, you're not going to live forever, but try to make things that will. And this course could go on to become, you know, very important. If it gets important, I mean, I have a few years left in my life, and I'll do the best job I can. I'm hoping I'll create some other people which will take it and run with it. And I, you know, my course basically is not my course. I tell every one of the schools, here it is. You've got to make it your course because you have a unique population. Each population needs different things. You know, Sacred Heart, they're going to spend more time on principles than they may be on passions and partners. You know, a place like New Jersey Technical Institute is going to spend more time probably on passions. And other people are going to start to say, hey, your most important things are partners. But I think this is a vocabulary. Keep asking yourself, what are my passions? Have my principles changed? And principles are very important. I mean, there's some basic principles, as you know, do unto others. But as life goes on, one of my principles on Wall Street was to live happy was to live hidden. No, it's don't go into press. I had a company to run. I was a CEO. So I didn't no press, no TV, no magazines, nothing. Now, of course, when I'm selling ideas and books, I've gone. My Instagram, it scares me to death, and you know, LinkedIn and so forth. But you have to change your principles as well. And that's what I say. You know, once every couple of years, you sit down with yourself and say, let's go through this thing. But it's nice because you have a vocabulary to go back and reference. It's not just starting all over again. Long answer to our question. Sorry, Chris.
No.
My daughter says, what are my weaknesses?
No, I'm learning it's your passion, too, what you're doing here, and that's important because it's we have to wrap up here, but it's not just doing something, but watching what you're doing to make sure that it's working for you and it's what you want to be doing, and you always have to keep a level of awareness about yourself as you're going through life. Just to wrap up, Ed, talk. How do schools bring you or your program in? What do they have to do? How can they get to you?
Well, I go to the school and I show them the program, and there's usually somebody in the either development or career counseling, or one school is in the English department. Somebody who's a zealot, you know, catches on to say, I want to do this, and they go for it. Recently, Stony Brook picked it up and was picked up by the career center. At Rochester, the career center is doing over 200 kids in 10 different sections. Wow. Hobart has it as a required freshman course. Brunswick School has a required senior course. So each school is a little bit different. You have to find the person that's really interested. And of course, you know, some can't, they need funding and so forth. I do a little bit of funding to help out because when you're starting something new, you know, somebody's got to say, how am I going to offset the cost? So that's a problem. Some schools just can't do it, period. But you know, I've approached 10 schools as operating right now and have another 10 schools that are in various stages of interest. So I'm having fun with it. And I think it's real because I'm getting people, you know, I'm getting feedback from schools saying kids have really changed. They really have. They've changed their direction. They've changed their interest by studying themselves. So that's kind of fascinating to me.
You can find out more at Ed's website, Ed Hajim, H-A-J-I-M.com. Learn more about his books, The Road Less Traveled, as well as the four P's, the Modern Family, preparing for your future. We have the link over to our homepage as well. Ed, when it comes to building a legacy that makes a difference long-term, you have certainly succeeded in that, as you have in so many points of your life. Your life is indeed a lesson to learn from, and thank you for sharing that wisdom, that knowledge, that experience, and thanks for being here today.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. It's always good to talk to somebody who likes what you're doing.